Today on Rockin' the Suburbs,
Dan Gursky joins us for the show, and he just got back from Nashville.
Oh, cool. I didn't even know he's a bachelorette.
All right, Patrick, we're in a new location for this week of episodes.
Yes, we are, Jim. And we are not in the district. We're actually just barely into Maryland, and we'll have our guest. It's been a long time since we've heard this person's voice. He was on the show constantly. I feel like, why have we let so much time go by? But I'm glad that we're here.
You have to ask him. What's been going on, Dan Gursky?
Well, see, I figured that after Patrick and I did those episodes without you, that I wasn't allowed back on the show.
Oh. That's right. Or yeah, that spinoff would take off. So great.
That was back in D.C., and subsequently, we have moved about a quarter mile into Maryland. So I am now a legitimate suburbanite.
Yeah, that's right. I guess.
Although, it's just a much more urban suburb than the old place, which was very suburban. So it's a little bit of a twist on things.
It really is interesting. I was going to say, like, even though you've just crossed a quarter of a mile out of the district, it's definitely a very, very different vibe.
It is. It is.
Yeah, it's kind of cool. It feels like an emerging kind of place. It's really interesting.
It is. We didn't downsize physically. We downsized financially. We ended up with a bigger house for some reason.
It's a great
and
place.
And I vowed never to buy a house where I had to cut the grass again, yet I seem to have a bigger yard now.
Whoops.
It's very nice.
Isn't it?
This is a very nice place, and it's unfortunately a rainy day.
Other than
you know, that's a little bit of a downer.
And I appreciate you guys driving like 3.5 hours to get here in DC traffic in the rain.
Oh, the Third Street Tunnel is always a fun trip.
So we'll make it worth your while. We got some food and drink and such. So
absolutely.
Maybe the sun will come out later. Probably not.
So when did you move in here?
I've been here a couple months.
Okay.
So this is the first, you know, we've had a couple dinner parties and such, but this is the first really exciting event in the new house.
Exciting event. Yeah.
Yes.
We've had, you know, really popular American figures.
So we were just discussing before we started recording that you still have a rug yet to arrive, right?
Yeah, a lot of stuff. The house is newish, but I was telling Patrick that for about 2 months we were renting and we had to keep the furniture in our old place. So we had the folding chairs and the lawn chairs in here. So
yeah.
This is a big step up.
Well, I just want to let the listeners know that this is a very lovely house with lovely hardwood floors and this beautiful large dining table that we're sitting at here and all that. But because of the hard surfaces, there you may hear a bit of an echo, but you know, just bear with us here on that.
We'll do our best. If any of the basement dwellers come up unannounced, you might hear somebody looking for food in the kitchen. And Jane, who's, you know, a part of this episode and everything, is here, but I think she's working and she's leaving because she might ask to be not included on the microphone. And it's easier if she's not even here, so we don't even have to pull her arm because she won't do it.
Did the basement dwellers come with the house or...
Sadly, they traveled with us.
Oh, okay. They didn't convey.
All right. So this is Rockin' the Suburbs. We are in the Maryland suburbs of Washington, D.C.
Mm-hmm. Mount Rainier.
My name is Jim Lenihan.
And I'm Patrick Foster.
And we wanted to come to Dan's house because he just had an exciting trip to Nashville not too long ago.
We've been trying to get this in, and it's so great we finally are doing it.
Yeah, it just lent itself to a good, I think, whole week of episodes on this topic. So where did you go, Dan?
So we went to the Americana Fest, which I think we're talking mid-September, because as we sit here, it's cold and dreary outside, and we were reminiscing with Patrick that it was probably 100 degrees.
Yeah.
At the time, which was unusually hot. I was listening to your Louisville Bourbon and Beyonds.
And it was boiling that weekend. Yeah.
The difference being, and we'll, I guess, talk about this probably in a lot more detail tomorrow, is most of the venues were inside. So it's like a week-long event featuring Americana music and whatever that is, right? So that was one of the things that I think we need to talk about. But this is sort of a newish... Not a newish genre for me, but I've sort of discovered this is where a lot of my favorite music seems to fall under this. And, you know, growing up, I was one of these, I'm cool with music, everything but country music. You know, if you listen to country, you weren't cool. And now it's like there's a big country element to this, and it is cool, actually, as it turns out. But when you mix in the other pieces of what Americana is, I think there's really some amazing stuff being put out. Not just Nashville, which we'll get to, but Nashville is sort of the epicenter of a lot of this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's a genre that has really, over the last 20 years, kind of exploded, right?
Totally.
So, Dan, what prompted you to go to the Americana Fest?
Wow, that's a good question. I think I had a friend, possibly a Facebook friend, who's a big music person. And last year he was posting about how amazing this was. And sort of bigger artists. I think, and interestingly, this year there was no, like last year, John Prine, Brandi Carlile, people like that played as just in the regular venues. This year there was no big stars. In fact, you can, I'm wearing my Americana Fest t-shirt.
Love that.
And if you look on the back, nobody's name is very big. A few are bigger than others, but you could go through the first few lines and maybe recognize, at least for me, recognize a few people. So, and it's just a kind of music that we, that Jane and I listen to a lot. And the Nashville thing was cool. I hadn't been to Nashville in 20 years. Mm-hmm. Jane had never been. So it just kind of came together as a cool way to spend a week and get totally overdosed on music.
Yeah, that's cool.
So, and hopefully, I think the point of this these episodes, we agree, is to expose people to some cool stuff that maybe they haven't heard of, because that was definitely the case with me. And just talking to you guys briefly, some of the people I mentioned, you're not familiar with. So I think
not,
it's going to be a pleasure for listeners to hear some new stuff.
It's going to be amazing. Right.
Well, I think what we thought is that for this first episode, we would just discuss sort of like, what is Americana music? Like, how do you define that? Or is it easily defined at all? So why don't we start by listening to the artist of the year from these awards, right? Absolutely. There were awards associated with this. So here's the artist of the year, Brandi Carlile. Every Time I Hear That Song is the name of the song.
A love song was playing on the radio. It made me kind of sad because it made me think of you. I don't wonder how you're doing, but I wish I didn't care. Because I gave you all I had and got the worst of you. By the way, I forgive you. After all, maybe I should thank you for giving me what I found. 'Cause without you around, I've been doing just fine. Except for any time I hear that song. Ooh. Didn't it break your heart when you watched my smile fading? Did it ever cross your mind that one day the tables would be turned? They told me the best revenge would be a life well lived. And the strongest one that holds would be the hardest one to earn.
Yeah, she's definitely become a household favorite, for sure. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm familiar with her before this new album, the latest one. I guess that this was for the 2018 album. But and I think there's a lot of ways she is sort of, to me, kind of epitomizes some of the Americana stuff. A mixture of genres.
Right.
A lot of women up front. There was very few women backing bands in the band still, but a lot of the people that we liked are maybe just more women, more political for sure, sort of the stuff that doesn't really fly in country music, Nashville mainstream, but you know, the mixture of country, folk, rock, roots, maybe she's a little more commercial, but we saw her this summer at Meriwether Post, which was worth the horrible trip up there, but she puts on an amazing show. And it was well worth it.
She's one of the ones on this list I have heard of. And she definitely feels to me broader, I guess, in a musical sense. And I don't know if that's because maybe she doesn't, and I don't mean this in a derogatory way in any sense, that the edges of her music aren't quite as protruding, at least in the stuff I've heard, you know. Mm-hmm. But there's, you know, having said that, that's an important thing to be able to embrace something kind of broad. So, for the fact that, you know, she's kind of as pretty well known, I would say. I mean, she's pretty popular. I don't know what the chart numbers are, but she seems like she's leading in some ways this movement. And I know her personal story is very interesting. She comes from the West Coast, which is obviously not, you know, very country traditional or folk traditional in any way. So I think that's really interesting too.
I think she's from Seattle, isn't she?
Yeah. And also openly gay,
yes,
and very like explicitly political in,
right,
in today's world.
Does a lot of humanitarian stuff, and you know, that's up front in her work as well. It's kind of interesting.
She makes wine also.
Did you realize she sells
wine for the cause also.
Oh, really?
It's a little pricey, so I didn't order it yet, but yeah, she has her own wine label.
That's really cool.
Well, I think this is a good starting off point because until the last couple of years or so, really kind of thought of Brandi Carlile as more of a rock artist. You know, and it's now she seems to be termed more this Americana, to the point even now where she did that project, The High Women, right? Which is, you know, really embracing that Americana, the countryside of Americana, right?
And she's got this new project. I don't know if you guys have heard of this, but she did an album with Tanya Tucker.
I did not know that.
Who is now, and she was there. We saw a little snippet of Tanya, just a short thing, but Tanya Tucker had never met Brandi Carlile, but Brandi considered her like a hero.
Yeah.
So she and the Hanseroth twins, who are in her band, wrote all the songs for Tanya Tucker's new album. They went back in her life story and wrote an entire album of songs based on sort of that Tanya Tucker would have written if she was still writing songs.
Wow. Hmm.
And it just came out, I think maybe last year. And it's really pretty, it's pretty great. And Tanya Tucker, like, adore, now she thinks that Brandi Carlile is like the most brilliant person in the world. Cause she did this, you know, writing as another person.
Yeah.
And, she produced it, and Shooter Jennings produced it. And I think she plays on it. It's worth listening to.
Well, and also recently Brandi Carlile was in the news because she did an interpretation of Joni Mitchell's Blue. And that was the first time Joni Mitchell had showed up in public in like 10 years to see anyone and actually came out to sort of give her her blessing. So that's another strain that's kind of been, you know, baptized on top of her, which is pretty neat. So,
yeah. All right. So I guess the question is, you know, how do you guys define Americana?
Mm-hmm. Well, I would say it's, for me, I don't know. I go back to kind of like the time when Wilco was covering the Carter family's No Depression, and there was kind of that whole, you know, No Depression alt/country movement that, you know, there was a magazine with that title, and just bands were kind of going back to find sort of that rawer country music that happened in the 40s and early 50s and things like that, and interpreting it with electric guitars. People that kind of like us, Jim, grew up with, you know, punk and hardcore roots, and we're taking that to kind of a different sound, but still keeping that very authentic kind of loudness. So Jay Farrar and Jeff Tweedy probably had a lot to do with at least my definition of kind of what it is, for sure.
Yeah. But also, I think a lot of the newer stuff is, and at least certainly at the festival down there, so much acoustic as well.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of upright basses, fiddles, every conceivable stringed instrument. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you got the bluegrass strain and the folk. And definitely there's stuff we're going to listen to this week that is probably not really Americana, really more rock or more soul. But it's sort of like anything that you want to lump in there that doesn't belong under country music. It kind of feels like it's become a catch-all for sort of like all this other stuff.
And that's why I think it's really hard to define.
Sure.
Totally. So, I mean, I guess if you go by, you know, parsing out the word, it's based in American roots music somehow. Right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that it's based on that tradition in some way. So I do think it's a hard thing to define. I am with you, Patrick, where I first kind of became familiar with the term or the idea. Actually, I think it was, well, in the 80s, you had sort of like roots music. That was kind of a thing that was happening. And you had cowpunk and that kind of stuff. And it was all like sort of that idea of like kind of cool country in some way or you know, rocked up folk music or something like that, right? And then in the 90s, you had alt country.
That's right.
Right, so Uncle Tupelo and then Wilco Sunbolt, Jayhawks.
Yep.
Numerous other bands, right? And they were basically kind of playing off of the sort of country music forms, but then playing them through, like, you know, Marshall Stacks, right?
That's right. yeah, with that punk attitude.
That's right. Yeah. I think though, then what also happened, if you kind of go back to like Graham Parsons and Emmylou Harris, and then sort of follow that strain up through the 90s, you had the really like traditional stuff where they were trying to not follow the country trends of Nashville, but trying to stay true to, like, you know, country tradition.
Yeah,
right.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. And that's a different kind of thread that I think continues now to the point where you were saying, Dan, like there's all like these modern string bands today, right? That are not amplified at all, right? Mm-hmm. And are very popular.
Yeah, you know? And part of the bluegrass stuff. Comes
we just
from that
had
as well.
We just had Mandolin Orange on the show, and that's been one of our more popular interviews that we've done.
Great example.
And they're, you know, of the old like Grand Ole Opry Ryman Auditorium tradition. Like you could take them in a time machine back in time and put them down, and people would sit there and applaud.
That's right.
What it they would were fit. Doing, right?
Yeah. Yes,
totally.
Well, and also I think, I mean, a lot of the stuff that at least that we're going to talk about this week, since it's because of the festival, this Americana, I guess it's the Americana Music Festival. So they have a chart, they have these awards, mm-hmm. so they're sort of shaping a certain kind of music also that's, you know, that's sort of focused less on the rock, more on the acoustic stuff. So we'll see how that plays out too, because I think they're pretty influential, even though this started small, but it's really turned into sort of one of the guiding forces on this, whatever we consider Americana these days.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The one other sort of category that I find really interesting within Americana, because I intellectually, I don't think it fits, but yet I think it has to by just because of the dynamics of music today, is somebody like Margot Price.
Yeah.
Like Margot Price, when you listen to her music or see her live, she is about as country as it could be,
oh,
right?
Heck yeah.
You know what I mean? So why is she Americana? Only because she doesn't fit in with today's country music, right?
That's right. Yeah. There's no place for her in that.
To some
sort
sense,
of professional Nashville umbrella.
Right. Yeah.
The commercial one.
Right. And we were talking about the political stuff too. I think she and Brandy and others have made themselves sort of not as welcome in Nashville, but a little Margot Price aside, because she was in Louisville,
she
right?
She was, yeah.
So, you know, her husband is Jeremy Ivey.
Uh-huh.
He played at Americana Fest. So I don't know how many people were in Louisville, but the last day, it was like 100 degrees. It was the only outside thing we went to, and Jeremy Ivey was playing there. That's one of the reasons we went. And I'm like, well, I wonder if Margot Price will show up. There was probably, everyone was in the shade.
Uh-huh.
So he came and played, and I think he was basically almost having a heat stroke. He was so hot. So Margot came up, and we were like 10 feet from the stage because he wanted to go out in the sun. And so she spent most of the time mopping his brow and singing with him so he didn't die of heat exposure.
Nice.
And so there was no crowd whatsoever because not too many people were crazy enough to be out in the heat. But Margot just showed up, and he's great too.
Yeah, for sure.
So that was sort of a little fun connection. But yeah, for me, her voice is so traditional country. The style is a little bit different,
I guess. I mean, that to me, the arrangements, the instrumentation, mm-hmm. all that stuff, you know, just screams out like what 60s or 70s country music,
yeah,
would you
for
say
sure.
for Margot?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But she's Americana just, you know, by default, I think, because she won't get country radio airplay or capture that modern country audience, right?
Yeah. And it's really interesting. Just I guess I was sort of vaguely aware of this chart, but when you look at it, it's, I mean, right now for the week of October 15th, Brittany Howard is on top of the chart. You've got Lucas Nelson and The Promise of the Real. His Gold Messenger, you know, is on there. Tanya Tucker has a record, at number 11.
I know. That's the one we were just talking about.
Yeah. Big arms that kind of embrace
and if
everybody.
You look at that, the charts, maybe a quarter of those people were at the festival.
Yeah.
Some of them are too big, didn't fit in, whatever. It's sort of nice that the big artists weren't there.
Lily May, who is on this chart in the top 20, was playing fiddle for Robert Plant during that, and his music was pretty much like Americana reinterpretations of Led Zeppelin.
Yeah, so. we actually saw her at one event too. She participated
she's,
in a
she's
big
She's quite
thing.
Striking.
Yep.
Let's play another song. So this was an artist we had on the show about a year ago for an interview. This is I'm With Her, and the song is called Call My Name.
Bead of sweat running down my neck, I can wipe it away, but I feel it yet. Pull the covers up tight, and I didn't hear you cry when you called my name. I wanna give you a kiss you can really feel. I never meant to set you back on your heels. All we can do is try to see it through. Don't let it phase your mind. Ooh. Ooh.
So that's I'm With Her. Mm-hmm. That's Sarah Jarosz, Sarah Watkins, and Aoife O'Donovan. And they're all successful musicians in their own right. And they came together to form this kind of Americana super group kind of thing. And they won Duo / Group of the Year.
Right.
And that song actually has a little more going on in production than a lot of their other tunes. A lot of their other stuff is more sparse, and you hear more fiddle and mandolin and those kind of traditional instruments. Right. This one feels a little more modern.
I think that's new. I think that one just came out possibly.
I think so, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like that a lot. One way to get exposure to this, and specifically related to the Americana Fest, is there's a Spotify playlist. I think it's called Americana Fest 2019. And it has one song from every artist who played in Nashville. Oh, so there's like cool. 300 wow. some people. So prior to going, I did a lot of listening to that, and I would say, and we can talk about this tomorrow, sort of how you figure out what to see.
Yeah.
Then you look them up like, I want to put them on the list. And literally nobody rated higher than anybody else. And I don't know who got to pick the one song that they put on the playlist, but it's a really great introduction.
Oh, that's really interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. The other thing I'll say too about Americana, another factor that's important is it values songwriting.
Mm-hmm.
And unlike modern country, which is sort of a factory system where you have separate songwriters from artists, from producers, all that, this is really celebrates the idea that the artist is expressing themselves in some way. They tend to be the people who are writing the songs, and the songs, I think good songwriting is really valued too.
Yeah, right? Absolutely. And so, a lot of the stuff we're going to listen to is definitely singer-songwriters, and also just the musicianship as well. I mean, the level of playing, these are not just, people that are in this, just making, making cheap country music. This is like incredible people. And you start seeing, actually, it's funny, after a while, we see some of the same people in different bands, because I had a chance to talk to a couple of musicians about sort of the Nashville music scene as well. It's, it's really tight. I mean, especially, I guess, even among the I think they were talking about among the sort of Americana type people. Mm-hmm. It's a pretty tight knit, because people would say, I wrote a song with her and somebody else that you saw. And then you'd see the band, this guy's playing with her and he's playing with her.
Yeah.
And they're writing songs together.
Which is one thing they took from the old school 50s Nashville tradition, right? Where you had your Nashville Cats and you went down there and they played with people and they collaborated, and that's what they did.
Yeah. So speaking of the songwriting, we're going to play out with sort of, an OG Americana act, right? Who has really, I think, been on a big resurgence lately.
Totally.
People love him. John Prine.
Yeah.
Was an award winner, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I have to say, I think this latest album of his is worth all the awards. I mean, you think the guy is, and he literally almost died, and he's back as good as ever. It's really remarkable. And then they also had, it's worth looking up the nominees and the people that, just as an aside, maybe we'll talk about this tomorrow, but this show is going to be on Austin City Limits, the awards show from the Americana Fest, because they had 2 or 3 dozen amazing performers. Elvis Costello was there.
Wow, was he really?
For some reason. Huh. Really great, great stuff. And John Prine may have won a Lifetime Achievement Award in the past. So they do that kind of stuff like that the Grammys do too. But this was specifically for the Tree of Forgiveness, I guess. Is that the name of the album?
Yeah, that's the name of the album.
Album and Song of the Year. I think he won both.
Wow.
Great. So we'll play out with the song Summer's End.
Okay.
If anybody would like to comment on Americana, I think we have a few listeners who are into this.
We do. This is going to be big.
Yeah. So the way you can do that, you can call
612-440-1984
or email rock@suburbspod.com or find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all those at Suburbs Pod. All right. So all this week, more Americana, more tales from Nashville, right, Dan?
Yes, indeed.
All right. It's Rock in the Suburbs. I'm Jim Linehan.
I'm Patrick Foster.
And I'm Dan Gursky.
And here is John Prine with Summer's End. We'll talk to you guys tomorrow.
Summer's End's around the bend, just flat. The swimming suits are on the line, just drag. I'll meet you there for our conversation. I hope I didn't ruin your whole vacation. Well, you never know how far from home you're feeling until you've watched the shadows cross the ceiling. Well, I don't know, but I can see it
snowing. In your car, the windows are wide open. Just come on home. Come on home. No, you don't have to be alone. Just come on home. Valentine's break hearts and minds at random. That old Easter egg ain't got a leg to stand on.
But even though there was 50,000 people there, there was probably more bachelorettes in Nashville at the time.
Always the case.
I mean, that's insane.
the scene
along Broadway. Yeah. And then the Uber drivers, like, you're here for what? Never heard of it. Yeah. You know, there was like a coffee roasters convention going on. There was probably just as many people because it was spread out all over town.
Yeah.
So many venues. And we'll talk about this more specifically, but it was almost like just a few music fans were spread around the downtown, and then the bachelorettes were sort of everywhere around the outskirts.
Falling
of
all
that.
Over themselves. Yeah.